There's a website called The Cult of Anxiety. For those of you who are worry warts, I highly recommend it. For those of you who want to be conspiracy theorists, it's a good place to start. But there is some information that is somewhat helpful. And in The Cult of Anxiety, they cited a study that was conducted and commissioned by the United States Senate in 1965. The study was conducted to determine the effect of technology on the working class American. The report that was then later submitted to the subcommittee and ultimately to the full membership of the U.S. Senate stated that by the year 2000, because of the influence of technology, in particular cyber automation, that the average American would work only 20 hours a week. The remainder of the study urged further Senate action to determine how best to direct the American public in what to do with all of their leisure time. I thought that was very interesting. Are you struggling today to figure out what to do with all of your leisure time? If you are, then we probably have some jobs for you. Interestingly enough, if you read on, you find that the study was perhaps thwarted by not necessarily the failure of the development of computer technology. We know what that was like and that it moved at a very rapid pace and well beyond what could have been imagined in 1965. But maybe what changed more than anything else was that the American society went from a society that produced goods and provided services to support those goods that it produced to a society that became consumer-driven. As we became more and more consumer-driven, we found ourselves grasping for more and more. What had previously been out of reach for the average American became well within their reach. And so we started working more hours. Other social influences started to impact decisions that were being made within the home. And other members within the home started working outside the home in order to contribute money for the purchase of goods and for the continued affluence that reached its pinnacle in the 1990s. And still, we find that today, Americans work more now than they ever have. And in fact, just 2 years ago, these same people who study such things, and I don't know who they are, I don't have their names, but these same people who study such things say that Americans have now surpassed even the Japanese in the number of hours that they work per week. Now, what does this mean? Well, it means we're tired. That's what it means. It means as a people, we find ourselves fatigued, emotionally spent, spiritually depraved, physically worn out. In fact, you find yourself in a situation where on some mornings you maybe just don't want to get up and do. Kind of like Bradley said, although I will say a four-week-old can contribute to that as well. What do we do? How do we cope? What is the response from a Christian perspective, or is there one? Well, I believe there is. I read a scripture verse that was actually shared with me, one that's familiar to us, that brought some peace, it brought some sense into this kind of confusing environment. And it brought something that I think a lot of people are missing, all of us at one time or another. And that is the rest that comes, that really restores and brings about a change in one's life. The Bible teaches us, as Jesus speaks in the midst of such circumstances and says to us, "Come to me, all who labor and are heavy laden, and I will give you rest." Let me share with you a message today that really is not connected to anything in particular as far as a series of study or anything like that, but just one that kind of flows from my own personal place in life. Let me share with you a message that can provide you with a reminder of the greatest source of strength the world has ever known, that can bring sense to an otherwise senseless morass of anxiety, that can bring direction in what would otherwise be a confusing set of circumstances that might very well lead astray, and that can restore what has been depleted more rapidly than anything else that you can do or take or experience. Let me give you the hope that comes from the one who is the author and the finisher of such hope. And let me give you the assurance that can come to us only by the knowledge of the one who we can rest assured in. Let me share with you a message then entitled, Rest Assured. I was trying to find a way to play on these words. I found that if you work at it a little bit, you can actually play with words quite a bit and come up with a variety of meanings that can give different direction. So as you think about that title, think about the assurance that comes from knowing that Jesus is the one who calls us to complete rest. I was walking down the walkway between the buildings and the landing at Branson not long ago, and a fellow was standing outside of a store, and he said, "Excuse me, sir," he said, and I thought surely he was going to try to sell me timeshare. He said, I was just wondering, are you getting good sleep at night?" And I thought to myself, well, that's kind of a personal question. It's really none of your business, and I'm not sure how I feel about talking to you about it. I looked up and I realized that we were standing outside of a store that sells beds. And he said, "Do you know what your number is?" And I said, "Well, as a matter of fact, I do get pretty good sleep at night." And I said, "Yes, my number is 65. He said, "Really?" So he said, "You already know all about it." He said, "Could I interest you in an upgrade?" I said, "No, you can't, but it's not a bad try." Now, what he was talking about is this bed that you buy that pumps air in, you know, and you've got a sleep number. You've all seen the commercials, and you know what it's about. Maybe you like it, maybe you don't, whatever. I can tell you that the very best bed on the planet, the one that they talk about that provides the support and cushion for every part of your body, so that you're not going to hurt in the morning, which, by the way, after 50 is a joke. You're going to hurt. I don't care what you sleep on. I keep thinking, well, maybe it's my bed. No, it's you. It's not me. It's you. No matter what you do, no matter how well you arrange, what time of the day you stop taking in caffeine, or what sort of exercise regimen you follow, the reality is that all of the physical comforts and accoutrements that you can gather and the very best and most precise sleep number you can come up with will not overcome a troubled soul. Rest assured comes not from what you sleep on, but it comes from the one who dwells within. This is what Jesus meant when he said to his followers, "Come to me, all who labor and are heavy laden, and I will give you rest." Let me talk to you for a moment about the rest of your life. Or maybe you could say it, the rest of your life. Here's what Jesus is offering us. He is offering us rest that brings peace. And it begins with a clear and simple statement that says, "Come to me." How much time have you spent with the Master? How much time have you spent at the foot of the Savior? How much time have you given this week that goes strictly to the development and the progression, the maturing of the relationship that you have with Him? How much time have we spent in the Word? How much time have we spent in prayer? And to what degree are we willing to trust God? And more importantly than all of that combined, to what degree are we willing to obey God? Because it is to the degree that we are willing to obey that all of the other things, Bible study and prayer and ministry activity and all of the other stuff that we think of as ways that we encounter and experience and are encouraged by Christ, it is obedience that brings all of that home and makes it real in our hearts and lives. In fact, without obedience, we do not come to Jesus. We only come to the place where Jesus might also be, and we observe from afar, but until we come to Him and we say, Lord, forgive me, and we say, Lord, dwell within me, and we say, Lord, be the Lord of my life, and we obey Him, we haven't come to Jesus. Coming to Jesus means a change in one's life. It means a change in direction, and it means a trust that goes beyond simply saying something, but all the way into doing something. He says, come to me, all who labor and are heavy laden. Jesus spoke these words to a group of people who were burdened by the weight of legalism. They were in a situation where everything that they did was almost microscopically observed. For instance, it was possible on the Sabbath day for you to do some things but not other things. For instance, it had been determined by the legalist leadership of the Jews of that day that it was okay for you to draw a line that was 2 inches long, but it was unacceptable if it was 3 inches. If it was 3 inches long, it was determined that that was work and therefore a violation of the cessation of labor on the Lord's day. Imagine trying to live under the weight of those rules and regulations and the insecurity that would inevitably bring and the anxiety that it would produce and the fearsomeness that would cause distance between the believer and God. It would no longer be an experience whereby we worship God and enter into a relationship with Him similar to what we hear when Jesus says, come to me. But it would be an experience based solely on our own performance religiously, how well we do this and how consistently we refuse to do that. That is not a life of peace, nor does it bring tranquility and rest. It only produces anxiety. It produces fear. It produces uncertainty and unsettledness. It is the kind of laborious, heavy-laden religious experience that was common in that day and that many have forced into our world today. Why is that? Well, we almost have the feeling, it seems like at times, that unless it's hard and painful, it must not be real. But it is so much the opposite of that. Jesus came to bring us the rest of our lives. He came to bring the peace that sustains us and guides us and fills us and enables us. That's why when He offers us and says, come to me, all who labor, that is, who work under the leadership of legalism and are heavy laden, those who bear the burden that is accompanied by the failure and inability to ever feel like you can be good enough, He says, come to me. You're going to find rest from all of that. You're going to find relief from all of that. You're going to find peace. So much of what we experience in this life that causes us fear or anxiety or pain is self-imposed. And it is because we have simply learned these patterns of behavior, but they are inconsistent with genuine faith. In fact, one has to question whether or not it is even possible to live a life of abject anxiety and at the same time believe in Jesus Christ and trust in Him. I'm not sure you can do both at the same time. It doesn't mean that anxiety isn't going to come, or that if you have anxiety, then you should feel guilty. Please, I'm not trying to add to your burden. I'm trying to lift it. So don't take what I say and co-opt it into more cause for anxiety. Listen to what I'm telling you, and listen to the call and the beckon of Jesus Himself. For he's not calling you to a religion. He's calling you to himself. It's so simple and yet so easily missed, because all he says is, come to me. Come to me. Do you hear it? Do you see it? Do you realize the welcome in that command, in that offer, in that invitation? Jesus says, if you want rest for the weariness of your soul, I will give it to you. Now, I have always looked at that last phrase and thought to myself, I will give you rest if you want it. I will give you rest if you come to me and trust for it. I will give you rest unless you can work it out on your own. That's how we interpret that. But that's not what it means or what it says. In fact, what it says is that I alone can give you rest. It's an exclusive statement that Jesus makes that reminds us that apart from him, it isn't possible to know the peace that comes only in him. It is a statement that reminds us of the exclusivity of the gospel, meaning very simply that the gospel alone brings hope and salvation. And there isn't any name given among men other than Jesus whereby we must be saved. Only he can do that which we most need. So that when he says, come to me, all who labor and are heavy laden, and I will give you rest, he's saying, I'm the only one that can give you rest. You've got to decide if the rest of your life is going to even be a reality for you, or if you're going to live the rest of your life consumed with anxiety. You have to decide whether you're going to experience the rest of your life that is going to bring you the freedom and the peace and the joy that can be known only through this lasting eternal relationship with Jesus Christ that is a daily walk of trust and obedience in him, or whether the rest of your life is going to be lived by your own standard and out of your own resources. It is a powerful statement. It is a beautiful command. It is a welcoming invitation. And it is an exclusive offer. Jesus says, not only the rest of your life, but he goes on in verse 29 and says, take my yoke upon you. In verse 30, he says, my yoke is easy and my burden is light. You've heard the Bible speak to the issue of being unequally yoked. Let me show you when unequally yoked is actually a good choice. Man was plowing with a team of oxen, and the field was being prepped for planting, and a man from the nearby metropolitan area saw this taking place, and he paused, got out of his car, and simply watched the precision with which this farmer plowed his field using a team of oxen. He noticed that one of the animals was larger and probably older than the other. And not long after he began watching, the farmer decided to take a break. He pulled the team off of the field and under the shade of a tree and walked over to the gentleman who was watching and introduced himself. He said to the farmer, I was fascinated by your work and just wanted to watch for a while. But he said, I noticed one of the animals is larger than the other and apparently older. Is that how you train them? He said, well, yes. He said, it is how we train the younger animals. He said, we'll yoke a younger oxen to an older one to help him learn his way around the field. But he said, really, that's not the primary reason we do it. He said, the primary reason I do it, he said, is if I put two young ones together, or even if I try to do it with just one of the younger animals, he said, they'll pull and they'll do the work, but they won't know when to quit and they'll work themselves to death. That was not how I expected that story to end. And yet, it made perfect sense. Take my yoke upon you. I think a lot of times we have the idea that being yoked means that we are going to bear this heavy load and this wearisome burden. And that's what the word yoke means. To be yoked is where an apparatus is fitted around the neck of the animal, and then they are enabled to pull against that yoke so that whatever is hitched to them, they are going to move along. That later became a term that was used in New Testament days of groups of people who aligned themselves with a particular teacher. And so they became yoked to a teacher. They became disciples of this teacher and would follow them around and would listen to their instruction and would learn from them. But they were referred to as being yoked. We even have used and developed the English term yoke fellow in response to that, of someone who is identified with another. So it fits very beautifully. But Jesus uses this term in the original sense, as we would think of it, as a means by which the work was getting done. He's not suggesting to us that coming to Him, finding the rest of your life in Him, is going to mean that you never do anything at all. It means that you're going to do something, but you're going to do it in a very different way than you've done it before. He said, take my yoke upon you. Again, I mentioned to you earlier on that trusting in Jesus has as much to do with obedience to the word of Christ as it does with anything else that we say. Our identity with Christ is word only until it becomes reality in the way we live. It doesn't mean that we're perfect, and it doesn't mean that we don't struggle or have areas of weakness. I'm not suggesting any of that, even for a moment. What I'm calling us to is the reminder that there is an accountability and a responsibility inherent in every relationship that has value, and that is certainly true, in fact, more so in one that is eternal. And so we are committed to Christ, meaning that we have yoked ourselves to Him. But He says to us that when we do, we are understanding that we are doing so not so that we work harder, but we are doing so in order to learn from Him and to grow in Him and to follow His leadership, because He says, my yoke is easy, my burden is light. I thought about that a lot, and I studied it quite a bit to try to understand more and more exactly what was intended. But when unequally yoked is a good choice, is when we commit ourselves to Christ and we understand that in doing so, what we gain in Him is actually what He describes as easy and light. Does the Christian life feel easy to you? A lot of times it doesn't. A lot of times it feels really hard. Maybe easy doesn't mean necessarily without effort, but maybe easy means without complication or confusion. Maybe what he's talking about has less to do with the amount of effort we put forth and more to do with understanding where our truest hope lies. Maybe the reason that the yoke and the work that he has given us is easy and light is because we realize that all that needed to be done to accomplish it in the first place, he has already done. Have you thought about the fact that you contribute nothing to your salvation? I have nothing to bring. We were talking about Christmas time and doing some preparation for that. Of course, I mentioned the choir's meeting in preparation for the cantata that they'll do on Christmas Eve. And it seems so far away, doesn't it? I mean, this is September, for crying out loud. But you and I both know that time passes quickly and that will evaporate before we even know it. And so it's important that we prepare. The Christmas story has contained within it the story of the men that we refer to as the wise men or the magi, who came from the east seeking the king who had been born. And they brought gifts, it says, and presented these gifts to him. I've often wondered, what gift would you give? We even posed that question. What can we give to Jesus? You can't really give anything to the one who has everything, can you? What do we give? We don't give anything. We receive the gift. The only thing that I contribute to my salvation, and if this is a contribution at all, is to simply receive that which he has already done. But when we try to impose our work, when we try to infuse our contribution, then all we do is confuse the issue and we muddy the water. Jesus reminds us that his yoke is easy, his burden is light, and the reason that it is because he's already accomplished all that needs to be done for salvation. He died in order to pay the penalty for our sin, but he rose again that we might be justified and victorious over death itself. So not only is sin and death defeated in him, but also the righteousness that you and I are incapable of because of the sinfulness that even remains after we trust in Jesus. That righteousness that he alone has perfected is imposed on us as an act of God's grace, so that when God looks at us, he doesn't see what we've done or what our accomplishments are or how well we've measured up. He sees what Christ has already accomplished, and we are declared righteous and given full standing before him, even now, today. My burden is easy. My yoke is easy. That which seems heavy in this life, in Jesus, is light. I think a lot of the effort that we put forth, the frustration and the anxiety associated with Christian service, is because we have sought to do everything on our own and by our own strength and ability. And because we are not restored in him, or we are not living in full trust of him, we do not benefit from all that he has already accomplished. And therefore, we find ourselves worn out, are working ourselves to death. I was talking to some of the men that are not members of this church on Wednesday morning after our men's Bible study. And so they haven't heard all of my stories. And so I get to tell all my stories again. You'd think it'd be nice if I could get new stories, but I think I'm at the point where new is just not possible anymore, so you just repeat the old stories. But you're also, the good thing is, you're getting to the point where you've forgotten who you've told them to, and so for you it's a new experience all over again. And so I'm reaching that point. And you can always tell too, because other people, when they've heard it, they'll say, yeah, we've heard that. Like, please, old man, you've done this so many times and we just can't take it anymore. You've got to stop. Well, anyway, I haven't stopped, and I'm not going to. And so I was telling the story, and we were talking about effort and work and schedules and so forth. And one of them asked about a particular schedule that we keep here at church and some of the way we go about counting. He said, man, that's a lot. He said, how do y'all do all that? And I said, well, we just wear people out. So we wear out teachers and workers and students and people who come. We just wear them out. I said, haven't you ever heard the story? Mary had a little lamb. It did not become a sheep. It joined a Southern Baptist church and died from lack of sleep. See, there's some of you have forgotten it too. That's just the way it is. I mean, I wish it was different, but it's not. The problem is that it wears us out, and it makes us tired, and it seems heavy. And then when we complain, well, the problem's church, or the problem is scheduling. No, the problem is a lack of trust in Jesus. The problem is trying to put a yoke on that we have decided we need to pull, that we need to contribute, that we need to add to what Christ has done. And I'm telling you, there's nothing you can do that is going to add to or enhance in any way the most glorious single event of all history. Jesus really is enough. He really is. And then in verse 29, the latter part of the verse, I only read the first part. Transformation is possible and it can happen without fear. He says, take my yoke upon you and learn from me, for I am gentle and lowly in heart, and you will find rest for your souls. Transformation without fear. Transformation without fear is what he is talking about when he refers to the learning process. And so we're talking about learning something that we don't otherwise know. But notice how it works. Learn from me. So first we come to Jesus, then we trust in Jesus, and now we learn from Jesus. Being a learner is something that I think a lot of times slips our mind. We seem to think that as long as we get saved, as long as we join the church, or as long as we've been baptized, that everything else is okay. And we forget that Jesus did not commission us to go make converts, church members, or just baptized believers. That Jesus called us to go make disciples. That's what he called us to do, followers of Christ. A disciple is one who follows Jesus in every way, and you cannot follow if you are unwilling to learn. You received a newsletter this past week. If you're a member of the church or a regular attender or somehow found your way onto a list that we have with an address associated with it, if you didn't get one, if you'll see us, we'll be glad to put your name on the list, or if it was overlooked for some reason, please know that we don't get together and decide who we're going to neglect as a way of punishing you or because we don't love you. That doesn't happen. It's just an accident. So just let us know and be calm about it. Hey, I didn't get a newsletter. Could you check on that for me? Sure, we'll check on it. Don't come and say, I didn't get a newsletter. What's wrong with you? Well, what's wrong with us is nothing. But what's wrong with you is you need to chill and listen to this sermon again. So anyway, we sent you a newsletter. It's got a whole schedule on it regarding the upcoming discipleship schedule. And there'll be some other classes that we'll add along the way. And so we encourage people to take these classes. We encourage you to get involved in small groups. Carol's spending time with our small group leaders and trying to develop them and the ministry within the small group, not only to ensure that it's biblically sound and secure, but also that it's most effectively reaching and meeting the needs of the membership. And incorporating everybody into that, because we want you to learn and then we want you to practice. We don't want you to just fill your head. We want you to give your life. We don't want you to just listen to what Jesus says. We want you to do what Jesus says. All of this is a part of what it means to be a disciple and what it means to learn from me. My father was really good at showing me how to do things. He was not so good at letting me do them. Now, this is how you do it, son. And he'd show me. Next time he'd come around, here's how you do it, son. And he'd show me again. Third time I'd say, Dad, I got it. I can do it. I remember how to do it. You won't do it fast enough. Just let me do it this time. Fourth time he'd come around, Dad, I can do that. Nope, that's all right. Let me do it. You won't do it quite right. He wasn't very good at letting me do it. Eventually, though, you get out from under that, you know, and then you start doing it yourself. And then what happens? You have children, and they start growing up, and you show them how to do things. And what do you say to them? No, you won't do that right. What is the deal? We have a tough time. I can promise you that Jesus is going to let you do it. He's going to show you how, and you can learn from him, but he's also going to expect us to take the responsibility. He's going to be willing to support and encourage us along the way, even better than we are able to do for one another sometimes. When he says, learn from me, that means we've got to watch what he does. When he says, learn from me, it means we've got to listen to what he says. When he says, learn from me, we've got to practice what he shows. When he says, learn from me, we've got to pass on what we have experienced. Learning from Jesus means completing a cycle of life whereby we look and we listen and we practice and we experience and then we give away. That's what this is all about. This is what salvation is all about. This is what our experience in Christ is all about. We do all of these things as a part of the process that helps us to understand more and more what He is doing. Transformation without fear means that we can trust in Him because He reminds us, I am gentle and lowly in heart. The statement regarding gentleness doesn't mean that He is weak, or it doesn't mean that He is incapable. It means that He is humble, and it means He is helping us to learn the humility of the learner as well. Gentleness and lowliness is simply terms that are describing for us the kind of experience that we have in Him that is non-threatening and without fear, so that we come to Christ, we trust in what He says, we follow His leadership, we learn from what He does. Transformation without fear that takes us from where we were, lovingly, but very specifically, to where God wants us to be. Rest assured, it is just a simple phrase and term that I wanted to use to try to play off of that word rest, to make us think about it along the way, and to realize that a lot of the anxiety, fear, or whatever else is consuming us is self-imposed, or we've picked it up along the way in the same way that you gather a virus. And it's time for healing. And the healing can come only when you and I realize that we come to Jesus. Maybe you have never given your life to Him. That is the first step. You come to Him for salvation. There's nothing that you can add, so there's nothing that you need to worry about contributing. All you need to do is receive the gift that He offers you. You can do that in such a simple way by simply committing your life to Christ and asking Him to take away your sin and being willing to follow Him as the Lord of your life. But understand that this is not just something that you do in name only. It's something we do as a commitment of life. I don't expect anyone to understand fully what all is involved in that from that moment of the actual experience, but I do believe that you need to understand that the call that Christ has for us is not momentary, but it is eternal. Having made that commitment, though, we live our lives a lot of times by the standards of those around us, or even by what is broken within us, and that is not what He has called us to. And so we need to hear again the message that says, come to Me. And we come back to Him. That's what we do when we come to worship. That's what we do when we read our Bibles. That's what we do when we pray in faith. That's what we do when we serve with a sincere heart. There we find the hope and the peace. Learning from Him, growing in Him, following Him, serving because of Him. All of these are things that bring not only the transformation of life that makes us more than just believers, but makes us disciples, but it's also where we find the peace of life that gives value, meaning, and purpose to it all. Are you tired today? Well, you're not alone. There's a lot of people that are. Maybe the fatigue is coming, though, because you have not found the true source of rest. Rest assured that Jesus can do for you what you and I can never do for ourselves.